I'm wrestling, not weak for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the T-Row and Funky Show, episode number 81. Brought to you, as always, by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built and Dahmer Mats. And Tommy, we got a much-anticipated episode this week. And unfortunately, it's not Kyle Snyder because he's in Europe. But we will talk to him at some point. We're gonna talk about youth wrestling. And, you know, we've talked about this in bits and pieces, but we've never talked about it as kind of the focus, the entire topic. So I'm excited for this.
Absolutely, brother. And I'm glad you're a little bit more upbeat than last week. You had your dauber down a little bit. I don't often run into you when you're tuckered out, but I think the camp season got you, man.
Well, you know, we knocked out 19 camps in 6 weeks, and that last one was 6 days straight, you know, of just grinding. And, yeah, it's fun. The kids love it, but it's still a grind. So, I was exhausted. And then, obviously, I'm also training for my fight, which is September 2nd. So, you know, I kind of had a whole bunch of things that were just piling up on me. And it was
Let's do this tonight. I'm excited. Let's
rock that. I'm excited. I'm kind of worried that I might go on some monologue too long and put you to sleep or something.
No, I'm pumped about this. I think we both obviously have a common vantage point as athletes, but you're spending a lot of time in coaching, much more so than me. I've got a year or two of parenting under my belt with a child in wrestling. And, you know, we've just been in the game our whole lives, so I'm excited to just kind of open the topic up and talk about everything that's on our mind.
Sure. Okay, so, where we obviously have to start, we have to start defining what success is, right? But I did want to do one precursor, and that is I hate when people talk about it and don't be about it. You know, when you complain about something and you don't have a suggestive change. And so I actually do have some suggestions that I can't execute on my own, but I think we could execute as a risk community. So I'm going to save those for the end of the show. So it's not going to be all bitching and moaning. We are going to have some suggestions for you.
I'm in.
Okay, so let's define youth success. And I said you can look at this from a whole bunch of different vantage points, Tommy, and you and I talked about this last week. Obviously, you've got the individual wrestler. You got the parents. You have the youth coaches. You have the high school coaches. And then you have the wrestling community as a whole, right?
Right.
So there's a whole bunch of these different viewpoints you can look at. So it's like, well, which lens do you want to look through? And, you know, the first one I want to take a look at is the wrestling public, right?
Okay.
And this is part of the problem is that the wrestling public views those youth programs who are putting out state champions as successful, right? And I think it's almost hypocritical or it's two-faced because one of the biggest things the wrestling community complains about is lack of high school numbers. I just saw that we lost numbers for like the sixth year in a row or something, the sport of wrestling. Right. High school. And then, you know, on top of that, I know for a fact that the USA Wrestling rate of retention year over year is 64%, right? So we're giving all, you know, the wrestling public gives accolades to youth programs that have studs on the state and national level when, you know, if we really want to fill those high school lamps, we want our numbers to go up. We have to give accolades to those programs who are doing a great job building numbers.
Right. I'm with that. I mean, I can dig that. And it all comes down to what our definition of youth success is.
And well, I think, but as the wrestling public, if you got to say the numbers are being reduced, that's not successful, right?
Yeah, I would say that the wrestling public views youth success as a very black and white metric where, you know, if you win a lot, your wrestling club or the athlete is successful. I mean, I think that's what they would – that's how they would view it.
And so there's no metric to measure and there's nothing – no value put on having great numbers or giving the kids a great experience, Right. And I have a few elite youth, clubs in my head who I think they give the terrible kids, give the kids a terrible experience. They have terrible retention rates, but they do have a decent amount of success. And people think, wow, that's a good club, but they don't see the long term there, and they don't see that some of those people are hurting the sport. And so, I always pose this question, Tommy. I pose this question to high school coaches. I said, if all your youth club does, all it does is give you 10 eighth graders every year who know a little bit about wrestling and enjoy the sport, is your high school team going to be good? And across the board, everyone says, yes, obviously it's going to be good. Obviously.
Absolutely. Right.
But who, what youth coach has that as his goal? Give me, all I do want to do every single year is 10 eighth graders who are enthusiastic about the sport and who have a solid base.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but that's my goal for the youth club that I run. But, I think that, you've got to the problem with these youth coaches, and I'm going to defend them a little bit, is that, you have to satisfy a lot of end games. I mean, parents and kids have a multitude of different end games. And so if you just try to cater to one end game.
Of course. Yeah, I agree.
Their job is tougher than it thinks. It's not as simple as a lot of people try to make it out to be. But I think the one that you're suggesting, the one that encourages participation and makes sure that the only goal at the youth level is to make sure that they come back, identify fun with wrestling, kind of like Pavlov's dog, like when you hear the bell, you're hungry. It's like when someone says wrestling, you think fun. I mean, if you're doing that, I think all of the other stuff by default will eventually happen. And so I think that the vantage point that you have is the wise one. I think a lot of these youth coaches get really caught up into, well, I've got to satisfy this parent and that parent and this parent, that parent and this agenda and that agenda. And Johnny doesn't like live wrestling, but Billy, if he doesn't do a lot of live wrestling or go to tournaments, he's going to get bored and go play basketball. And so there's all these different agendas that you're trying to satisfy while sticking to some type of overall philosophy. And that's where I think that these coaches get caught up, these youth coaches that, but then someone like you comes along.
So Tommy, I guess my initial first point was me just talking about the vantage point of the wrestling public, what they see as success and what I think, I think what they should see as success is great numbers and retention. Because having a kid that's greater too, and having no other kids is not success. Because the same wrestling public that says, "Wow, that's great," then complains about the lack of numbers at the high school level. So I guess we haven't got to what the coach's definition of success is yet. But from the wrestling public, I think that's what the real goal should be. Is you should hope every wrestling program is putting out 10 eighth graders to their high school team.
Big numbers and retention. It can't be one or the other because if you have bad numbers and great retention, that means you might only be catering to a small group, and the wrestling public shouldn't applaud that. And if you have great numbers and no retention, that just could mean that you live in a massive community where every year there's 80 kids coming out and 40 of them are new, and it's just a revolving door. So you've got to have good numbers and good retention. I agree. I think that's what the wrestling public should applaud.
Yeah, and so one of my things at the end, and I've been talking to Martin Floriani about this. We've been bouncing ideas off of each other. Is that it would be really nice for maybe a governing body at USA Wrestling, or maybe Flo is going to be the one to do it, or NHSCA, or someone like that, to actually monitor and reward these things. And I think it's three simple categories, Tommy. I think it's every year, and it would make the most sense for USA Wrestling to do it because you could do it based on USA Wrestling cards, which would then encourage kids to sign up for USA Wrestling cards, which would then help USA Wrestling, right? So that would be the easiest one. But if you did most numbers, biggest increase gross, and biggest increase by percentage,
right,
for each club, and give a bronze, gold, bronze, silver, and gold in every category, and give those guys some recognition, give them some love, make that something that people shoot for.
Yeah, it would almost do you some good to provide support to that program, because then they can continue to build a sustainable model that people in surrounding communities want to try to emulate. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I like it.
Nice. So you want to go to the parents next? You want to go to the kids? You want to go to the coaches? What definition? I think those are obviously all so intertwined that it may be hard to tear them apart.
It is intertwined, but I think the wrestling public was a good place to start. And I think the next place we should go is probably the parents, because I would say that more oftentimes than not, the kids that are in wrestling, are in wrestling because their parents had an interest in exposing them to it and seeing if they would like it.
Sure.
So I think the motivation initially, you know, let's call it 7 or 8 times out of 10, Ben, is that fair?
I'm not willing to throw a statistic on it, but I'll agree with your sentiment that lots of times the parents, you know, have some inclination to have their kids wrestle.
So let's start with the parents. And I think that one's a little bit murkier than the wrestling public. I would say it's a little bit less black and white. But yeah. I think that, you know, the question should be, what should the parents' goal be? What should their reasoning be for getting their kid into wrestling?
I mean, if you want me to boil this down, I can boil it down really simply. And not only for wrestling, I can do this for all sports. And it's really simple, Tommy. You know, we get caught up in trophies and awards and all this other BS. But at the end of the day, the reason you put your kid into sport is to learn lessons for life, right?
No doubt.
That's what sport's supposed to teach us. And in sport, you can learn it in what may seem a hard way at the time, right? If you learn at age 12 that if you're more disciplined, you have more success, and because you weren't disciplined, you lost and you got your butt kicked and you're pouting about that, right? If you learn that at age 12, and then you say, hey, if I'm more disciplined, I'm going to win more next time, and then you start doing that and you win more, and you say, oh, wow, being disciplined really helps. If you learn that at age 12, that's a lot easier than learning at 28 when you got 2 kids, right? And you're not disciplined enough in your job, and then you get fired, and then you have no job. So to me, the real goal, and you know, we'll talk about ways to measure it, but the real goal, any parent would put their kid into sport, and I'm coming up on that age, my daughter's 4, is to learn great life lessons that are going to help her, because the percentage of people who are going to earn a living through sports is so infinitesimal that it's negligible.
Correct. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that the end game, the goal for parents in putting their kids in athletics at a young age is so they can pick up life skills that they will take later on in their life with them. And what's amazing to me is that a lot of these parents, you know, we all know that they get carried away every now and again, and their kids are being exposed to these great life lessons, but they're being exposed at such an intensity that's driven by the parent that they end up not participating in the sport at 11, 12, 13, 15, at the age where the lessons, those lessons, the genesis of why you put your kid in the sport, they aren't even active in the sport when those lessons will penetrate the mind and be something that becomes who they are.
Yeah.
And so people get carried away. They put their kids in this and they boil it down at such a high intensity. It's almost like life skills, high concentrate, age 8.
But the thing is, at age 8, Tommy, and I always say this, I don't want to bag on other sports on this podcast, but the one that I'm going to kind of bag on a little bit is gymnastics, right? And the reason I would say, and my daughter does gymnastics, but the reason I would say I would never ever want my daughter to be an elite level gymnast is because those girls are reaching their peak at 12 to 15 years old, right? Which means they're doing a high amount of training at 5, 6, 7, 8 to reach that level by age 12 or 13 or 14 or 15, right? I think from my dealings with kids, and I've spent a lot of time doing this the last 6 years, kids aren't making conscious decisions on their own till about 11 or 12 years old. And those who are at 11 or 12 are super mature for their age, right?
And I would agree with that.
That means at age 5, 6, 7, when you're doing high-level training in gymnastics, you're being forced to do that, which means you're not really taking in the life lessons because you're not making the decision.
Okay, I got 2 points there. The first one is that I couldn't agree more that choice is being driven by the parent, and it's something that, you know, it doesn't become a part of the kid's consciousness in terms of, I want to do this, this is something I want to be great at, to your point, until age 11 or 12. And even then, it's few and far between. And I hate it when people point out the anomaly. You know, the someone that comes to mind was David Taylor. I met him when he was like 12, and I just picture him when he was 8, even though I wasn't around him. And I think he probably was almost driving the boat then. But that's just such an anomaly.
Such an anomaly. I mean, and even got Tommy, even age 11 and 12, if they're making a decision at that age, that's a super mature kid.
I agree. And so I'm with you. And I wasn't that type of kid. You know, I wasn't saying this is something I want to be great at age 9 or 10. I was not that guy.
I made that decision for myself about 11 or 12.
I want to say 6th or 7th grade is when it was almost like an epiphany, Ben. I was just like, I want to be great. I want to be great, and I'm going to do whatever I have to do to see it through. But at any rate, one thing that I think in defense of the parents, because I'm getting a little bit of exposure to this as a parent, I'm also the youth club coach, and I was also a competitive athlete that was brought up in a home where my parents, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say pushed me, but they nudged me along at a young age. You know, Ben, every now and again, your kid has a plate of food and there's broccoli at the plate, and you make them eat it because you know it's good for them. Every now and again, your kid doesn't want to.
I don't do it, Tommy. I don't do it because I was so lackluster. I didn't eat very many foods as a kid, and I always hated when people forced me to eat stuff. Okay. So now I refuse to force my daughters to eat anything. I figure if they care about being healthy and they care about being in shape, they're going to do it themselves. And obviously, we pretty much only have healthy food in the house, so.
Oh, yeah, you're ruining my point because I could have applied. There are things that you make your children
do. Yes.
You know, you make them go to bed at a certain time because you know it's good for them even though they don't know better. You make them brush their teeth. You know, you make them do things to assimilate into society. And so every now and again, Ben, you know, like for example, my son Tommy, he's 7. You know, he wanted to go to a weekend wrestling camp. And I said, if you go, you've got to finish every practice. Well, it got to, you know, the middle of like the second practice, and he said he wanted to stop, and I made him continue. And so to me, there is a balance between that motivation. You know, if you want to get your kid into the sports for the purpose of achieving life, of gaining life skills that they can take with them the rest of their life, you know, only you as a parent know the barometer and know the temperature of what your child is experiencing, and sometimes you got to get involved. And I think every now and again, parents get a bad rap from elite level athletes that perhaps don't have much experience parenting or are in somewhat of a silo because they're such freaks of nature.
That's the one right there. You nailed
that
it.
They don't realize. It's like, dude, I still love my kid more than you could possibly imagine. And my motivation for them in this sport or in this specific activity has not wavered. But I've got to speak to them in a public fashion that is a little bit intense. Now, it's not, you know, the crazy stuff, but it's like, hey, buddy, go get a drink. Come back here. You got to finish your practice. I don't want to, Dad. I don't care that you don't want to. You told me you wanted to do this, and you're going to finish. Like, that type of conversation has happened with my children. And I think that every now and again, what I hear from these – usually they're elite level athletes or ex-elite level athletes, and they're like, you know, what are you doing to your child? And to me, I see what they mean, and I see the examples that they speak of, but there's other examples that, you know, quite honestly, you're just trying to raise your kid. You're doing there is no rule book for parenting. There is no rule book. And to me, it's like, as a parent, only you are in touch with that moment on what you think is best, and you have to live with that child. You have to take them home. You have to work with them the next day and the day after and the day after. And when it gets into baseball season or whatever, you have to carry those lessons that you learned from one sport into the next season. And so it's this big, huge, marvelous journey that you're responsible. You're responsible until they graduate high school, give or take. You're responsible to make sure that they think correctly as an upwardly mobile adult. Yeah. And so there are moments where in the comfort of your own home, I mean, I'm sure you've spoken to your kids in ways where, you know, if other people saw it, they'd be like, man, he's got to relax, right?
I don't get too worked up.
Well, I do. And I don't question my
mom. I didn't know you get worked up so much.
I don't get, you know, crazy, but I'm just being real here. You know, we've got a very real podcast.
Yeah,
and so, at any rate, you know, every time I speak like this, people always say to me, Yeah, well, you're different, Tommy, because you get it. You know, it's I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about other people, and it's like, you know, I don't think that's fair, because I think in a way you're giving me the benefit of the doubt, and you're giving these parents who don't have per se some big time wrestling resume. You're automatically framing them into some parent that lives vicariously through their child, and I don't think that's the truth. Sometimes it is the truth.
Let's get it kind of into the heart of what you're talking about, right?
Right.
You're talking about, you know, the kid, the parents who are pushing their kids to be successful, and so I guess the main message I would say there, Tommy, is I will have the understanding that most parents, we'll go 98% of them, actually truly do want the best for their kids, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair? 99? I don't know, 98, 99, something very high.
I don't think you should skim over that. I thought that was a phenomenal point, because I think most people don't think that about parents in wrestling with the, you know, I think they have their motivation and their intentions are very,
very good.
Very good.
Very good. Now, so
some help? Yeah, they need some help.
Yeah. So it's 98, 99. There's a dipshit every once in a while. But most of them are in it for the best interest of their children. That being said, they don't always do the most effective things. And to kind of what you said, some people said, you, Tommy, you are an expert in this subject, and you have seen it. But to most of those parents out there, I guess it's tough because they need to have good coaches around whom are giving them good advice, because you know, the driving parent, the parent who's really driving their kid, Tommy – I say, I've had so many college teammates like this. I've coached college kids like this. I've seen kids like this in high school. It generally ends up, there's three ways this can end up, Tommy. Your kid's really good at wrestling and they hate you. Your kid quits wrestling, but you have a good relationship. Or number three, your kid is really great at wrestling and they have a great relationship with you. And number three doesn't happen very often.
I'm with you.
It doesn't. I mean, I can name case after case of college teammates, because they made it to Division I wrestling, they made it up there, who could not stand their parents, right? And then lots of them, you know, quit the team, kind of failed out of college, flaked out, that kind of thing, right? A few of them did succeed, but they didn't have a great relationship with that parent, which that's not where you want to end up. It really isn't, right? And then
right.
I can think of a whole bunch of kids, you know, obviously mine are mainly in Wisconsin because that's where I grew up, that were superstars as kids, but were driven by the parents.
Right.
And then, you know, by the time they got to high school, they couldn't take it anymore, and they quit the sport of wrestling altogether. And
the biggest thing that I agree, and I think the biggest thing I would say to the parents is that, like, just don't think that there's, like, a manual for this. I mean,
I would say don't think you have to have success early. You don't. That's absolutely crazy, you know, and where this comes from is like parents who are driving their kids, they're driving them to cut weight, they're driving them to do a bunch of wrestling, they're driving them to do way more wrestling than they want to, right?
Yep.
And there's not a love for it there. And then so then since there's not a love for it there and the kid's not the one making decisions, they start hating what they're doing, right? They start despising what they're doing. And so they're either going to despise wrestling or they're going to despise you. One of the two is going to happen. Possibly
both. It's funny because if you ask someone, take their child out of the equation, just say, if you got a kid to truly love the sport, if you got them to truly love the sport, do you think they'd be really good? Yeah. 99 out of 100 people would say absolutely.
Absolutely.
They wouldn't be good. They'd be great. But what parents jump to, even though they can answer that question pretty simply, they don't apply the same philosophy to their child. They say, I've got to get my kid to win, because if he wins,
yes,
he will then love wrestling. And there's partial truth
to
that.
Hey, that was a good way you said that. I've never said it that way, but I'm gonna steal that.
Right. So
if you get your kid to love wrestling, they're going to be great. But if you get your kid to be great, they'll love wrestling, which is backwards.
Yeah, it's backwards. And so I think winning does contribute to loving wrestling, Ben. Again, I'm a realist here.
Sure, it helps.
I think that having success is a nice little ingredient to falling in love with something, but I don't think it's the only ingredient, nor do I think it's the most important ingredient. But I think having a little bit of success helps it along, especially in the beginning, quite honestly. But, you know, so to me,
Well, so I guess I would disagree there with success in the beginning, Tommy. And, man, there's a lot of shit to talk about here, huh?
Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe I would say it's because with that, we call it ninjas in training, our 5 through 9 year olds, we really discourage a lot of competition. And, you know, I think maybe, you know, 8 and 9 is where I'll have my daughter start competing if she does choose to like wrestling. She, you know, she's going to start in a ninjas program, but she likes it. But, man, 5, 6, 7, I can't see the point in competing, man. I really can't. I mean, I wouldn't be sad if all youth tournaments did away with K-2 division. I would not be sad one bit.
So I got a differing point of view, but I don't feel strongly because I know what you mean, and I get it. But, you know, I ran a youth club, and it was a community youth club. It wasn't an academy like you run, and it was a ton of first-year kids. And, you know, my goal is retention. My goal is to get these kids to really like wrestling. And I got to be honest with you, Ben. I had kids that I needed for them to go live to maintain curiosity, interest, and arousal around the sport.
Sure.
I had kids that it would behoove me to put a singlet on them and have them do a scrimmage. We did a scrimmage with another youth club. We went to a rec tournament that was very, you know, loosely organized on purpose, and it would behoove me to do that because it helped maintain and facilitate that curiosity to come back.
Really?
And on the same token, I had kids that if I were to do that to them, I would lose them.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I had just as many that were that way, just as many, at least in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then I had parents who wanted their kids to wrestle, and their kids didn't want to. I'm talking about compete. I had parents who didn't want their kids to compete, but their kids were reckless, abandoned. I feel like if they got to do a little bit of that action, they would want to come back. And so you have all of these different dynamics, and this is where we go back to the coach, especially the community coach. He's got a tough job if he really wants to retain people. You know, you've got to satisfy a lot of things. And so that's why, to me, you know, I communicated with parents and kids uniquely different case by case, depending on what their child, what they're thinking and stuff like that. And I guess I'm not answering it in a clear way.
No, I like that. I like that. And actually there was there's something in Wisconsin that a couple clubs do called beginners tournaments. And it's fantastic because all the parents go in the stands. There's no like locked hands or penalty calls, but that would, I wish there were some more of those, because that's where I would say probably a better start for 5 through 7, because, you know, you said that if you didn't have some kids wrestle, they wouldn't come back. I think some people go to a youth wrestling tournament, and there's these insane parents everywhere yelling, not because they're angry, but because they think that's how to best motivate their child, right? They do, in fact, have the best interest in mind. But they go there, and they say, holy shit, this is insane. I'm never coming back.
Yes, and Ben,
that happens.
I think one, in Ohio, they have tournaments. They're called novice-level tournaments, and you have to be wrestling 2 years or less to go to them.
Okay,
and
so that, like that.
I took my son to 6 or 7 tournaments last year, and I think 5 of them were like that. And I brought some kids from the community club with me, and it was laid back and fun. But to your point, I mean, did it all go perfectly? No. But what sport does, quite honestly? But
sure.
I just think there's this barometer that as a coach and a parent, you have to be measuring at all times. And if the goal is retention, to get your child to stay involved and to get your child to fall in love with the sport, I think, honestly, it kind of becomes a little bit common sense.
I guess you said, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, Tommy. I'm having a tough time. I kind of think early competition is more negative than positive. And obviously, there's some kids who are ready for it and there's some kids who want it. But like I said, I would say, at the levels we're seeing in America. And, hey, Tommy, the retention rate is 64%, so we can't say the retention rate is good. So people are obviously – Tommy, if you retain 64% of the customers that you have right now in your business, would you be happy?
No. If I retain worse than 90%, I'm really,
okay.
Really –
Okay, oh, all right. Well, now we got a standard. We have a standard. Yep. So if we're at 64%, would you say – So you're the CEO of wrestling, right? Right now, in America, you're the CEO.
Right.
And your retention rate is 64%. Are you saying we need to make some changes? Are you saying what we're doing is working?
what we're doing is not working. I haven't disagreed with that.
Okay.
We're disagreeing about early competition, not about our retention rate.
But I'm saying a lot of kids being forced into early competition is one of the reasons that they're not being retained, and because they'll go get their face mopped in the mat.
I think it's because of the application and the environment that we've created in that competition. I mean, look at this, Ben. Look at the retention rate in soccer. They play soccer games.
I don't know, what is it?
I'm assuming it's really high. I guess I don't know the statistic on it.
I wish I knew.
But here's the thing, Ben.
I wish I had the youth retention rate across all sports so I could compare it, because I know there obviously is more specialization than ever. And so maybe
here's the thing, Ben. If we did away with competition, period, end, until age 9.
No,
you know,
nine is a little too old. I think the K-2 division, I really, if I got my perfect world, Tommy, I'm doing away with it at all regular youth tournaments, and I'm making those specific beginner tournaments.
Well, that's basically the world that I live in Ohio, basically.
Okay, well, we don't live in that world in Wisconsin.
Okay, because here's the thing, Ben, and here's the reality. We, as a sport, we are competing against other sports for retention. And so we can't think that the alternative to wrestling is to sit at home or whatever. If they don't like wrestling, they're going to try basketball.
Yes.
If they don't like wrestling, they're going to try these other sports.
Yes.
And so these other sports are putting children in a lightly fun, competitive environment, community feel, not psycho stuff, not yelling. There's a very loose score that is kept.
Yeah.
And they are exposed to a somewhat lightly competitive environment, but it is about walking out there with a uniform on, parents clapping and cheering. There's a benefit to that, in my opinion. There's a benefit to going on stage, so to speak, and showing people what you've learned, showing people what you're proud of. But it's got to be presented properly. And I don't want to get too deep, like we're, you know, taking a toke from the pipe and talking till 6 a.m. or something. But I think that competition at a young age is good if it's presented properly and the parents and coaches are doing the right things.
Sure. That's fair. I can agree with that.
Okay. Good.
All right. So everywhere across the United States, we're going to implement beginners tournaments like Ohio has. I can dig that.
Yeah, and the thing is that as a parent, I want for my kids to obtain – I want them to get the merits. And I just wanted to say this before we move on, because I've put a lot of thought into this. It's like, what do I want my kids to get out of wrestling? Well, I would like for my kids to develop as a person by virtue of participating in sports – as close to as this at the same level that I did through wrestling. And I've taken myself through my life in wrestling, and it's like, okay, so at what time did I really start to gain these extremely valuable life lessons that have shaped me as a person? And I got to say, Ben, that about 80% of what I learned that I take with me to this day, I learned by the time I was about 18. So
that's fair.
And let me finish the thought here. Is that what I love for my kids to be collegiate athletes and potentially elite athletes post-college? Yeah, I would love that. But we all know, Ben, at least you and I know, that that's going to come from within.
Yes.
But I would love for them to develop enough of an interest, enough of a passion, and enough of a level of success where they experience success and failure at the high school level. And if they get that, both success and failure, through the high school level, then I feel like they're going to get at least 80% of what I got out of wrestling, which I think they would be very rich in wisdom from that. And so that's my end game, is to get them to that type of level where they're exposed in that type of way, where maybe they're trying to be a state champion or they're on a team that is competing for something significant on a soccer team or something. If they can get that, you know, I'll be a happy guy. I really will. And then anything beyond that has to come from within.
Yeah, I agree. Wow, Tommy, we really could legitimately talk all night about this. I hope we're not losing people. But so let's keep rolling. So we're kind of talking from the parents' perspective. a little bit. And so I guess I will say on these points, one of the things that I think happens frequently, again, we're talking, parents really do want what's best for their kids, 100%, whether they right. do it or not. And so there are these youth coaches who take these shortcuts, you know, a couple of the shortcuts that I see, a lot of live wrestling at a young age, not hugely beneficial for the long term. Weight cutting at a young age, definitely not beneficial for the long term. But they do create success immediately, right?
Right.
And so some people see clubs doing that, and they see them say, oh, that kid must be good. I'll take my kid there, right? So it, you know, if there was some way we could create a more discerning customer about you know, what coaches have the kids' long-term best interest in mind, not just to make themselves look good. Because while all parents might have their kids' best interest in mind, not all coaches have every kid's best interest in mind, right? A lot of coaches – I mean, even we go all the way to the college level, we see it. It really across all sports is, you know, forcing kids to compete when they're hurt because they need them in the game, right?
I think coaches, you know, on paper, Ben, no different than yourself, although you're not like this, is that, you know, the academy coaches don't need to create a sense of community. They actually don't even need to focus on retention.
Well, I disagree. I think we need to do both.
Well, if they care about this, but all they really need to do, Ben, is to get 100 zealots, paying them $150 a month. That's all. If you were a pure, stealth, shrewd businessman, Ben, that retention, I just got to find 100.
Yeah, but I think if you don't have great retention and you don't have don't build a community, I just don't know that it's going to happen. I mean, you might build something great for a few years, and then people are going to see you're a dipshit, and it's gonna flop. Eventually, you know, like I said, maybe not immediately, but eventually.
Yeah, I follow you. It's not quite as sustainable, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I've seen a lot of academies, they make a living just catering to the wrong type of parenting structure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and then also coaches got to be strong enough to stand up to their parents, and they got, you know, and hopefully coaches, if they have their kids' best interest in the kid's best interest in mind, are saying, you got to let me coach. I know what I'm doing here. I've done this before. I've helped people achieve. And what you're suggesting isn't going to be best for your kid.
Yeah, and I think they need to do that. Man, we are just on a tangent. But I think we kind of expected this. But I think that it's important for the coach to lead the athlete and the parents. It's very critical. But I think that to not involve the parent in the development of their child is somewhat counterintuitive to what's best for the child, wouldn't you think?
That's a tough question, Tommy.
There's one. I mean, I think true leadership, real leadership would be, listen, parents, I want to talk to you about what I think your role should be and what I think my role should be. That's not to say that I don't want you to be involved in your child's career, because only you know your child as well as you do. That being said, I am the expert in the sport.
Sure.
I'm every now and again, I'm going to need your guidance on how to read your child, on how to get through to your child. But also, you know, me being out in front of this and me mentoring your child is probably what's best for all of us here. And just involving them in that way instead of the stonewall stiff arm style that you see a lot.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
Because the stonewall stiff arm style
does not work.
Well, it just doesn't work as well. I mean, it obviously works. I mean, you can't argue that. I mean, it works. But it's like, if you want to create the most enriching environment possible, you know, I mean, it's like, what type of school teacher would not lean on the parents to help reach a kid?
Yeah, you're right. I guess earlier when I was kind of saying that's a good question, I was thinking, I was thinking that, you know, the parent does at the same time, while trusting the coach, has to be discerning about who, you know, that they're really focused on putting the best people around their kids.
Right.
I mean, it's like, for example, my daughter will be coached by my high school coach, who I know is freaking amazing. And so I can say, F it, let's let it go, right? But if I say which I'm not moving, I do my own thing. So if I had to move into a new community, right?
Right.
And I'm not just going to say, all right, Alex, go to wrestling, and you know, that guy's going to be in charge, right? I'm going to say, well, I need to scope this dude out a little bit.
Right, right.
So I guess, I don't know, I do want parents to give the coach autonomy, but maybe to be discerning of who that coach is.
Yeah, I mean, I think a coach needs autonomy. I think they need room to do their job. I mean, to me, it's no different than a school teacher. It's like they need to be the teacher, but for you to not consult with the parents on how to reach the child,
yeah,
it's like, why make the journey tougher? Now, I think a lot of coaches in a lot of sports eliminate the parental involvement because they just don't want to deal with it.
That's fair.
I mean, it's just like, I'd rather not decipher between a bad parent and a good parent, so I'm going to eliminate all parents. It's like, well, you just eliminated the good parents.
Yeah.
From the development of their child. So to me, that, you know, and it kind of becomes a little bit counterintuitive, but by the same token, you know, you can't let the parents, you know, the inmates can't run the asylum.
Correct.
And if the parents are running the deal, you know, man, I mean, we've seen that, right?
That's a recipe for disaster.
Oh, it ain't pretty. It is not pretty when that's
okay.
Going.
So let's recap what success is for parents. So, we obviously, they want their kids to develop as human beings. Number one, right? We both agreed on that.
Yep.
Okay. We want our kids to be in a great environment where the coach cares about their development and the coach is in charge. We both agreed on that.
Right.
And we both agreed on, if our kids never reach super elite status, if they're not you and I where they're winning NCAA titles, but they're you know, maybe striving to be a state champion or they're part of a great team and they're learning some of those valuable lessons, that can also be considered a success.
Correct. Absolutely.
So is that a fair synopsis of our parents' perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad we did the synopsis, because otherwise we just sound like babbling idiots. we need to do that from the coach's perspective and the athlete's perspective too.
Okay, so where are we going now, coach or athlete?
I think coach. I think the athlete coach should be last.
So let's talk – I guess let's do – you know, I had this idea to split it up, and we didn't split up. Let's split this coach up between your community coach like you did, right, and then your elite club coach you know, like I'm doing, because I think you can look from two perspectives here.
I like that, and I could not agree more. I think the motivation and just the place that you come from and the expectations that people have, you know, when you join an elite academy versus when you join a community club, the motivation from the parent and the kid are different. So I think yeah, because of that, the coaches have to be looking at it through a different lens.
Okay, so you know, I think, like I talked about, building numbers is gigantic, especially for the community coach who's pushing these kids into high school. I think it's especially important. I think, you know, they should be very instrumental in recruiting athletes out of the elementary and middle schools, showing them a great time. And you know, one of the things that, again, and a lot of these community coaches, they obviously want to see their kids do good, but sometimes they want to be the reason they do good, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you made a point earlier that it's so hard to coach to many different levels, right?
Right.
And so, number one, if you can split up practices, split up. If you can do a K through 4 and a 5 through 8, that's freaking awesome. Or if you've right, a 6 through 8 middle school team and a K through 5, that's awesome. But also, you know, and some of the community coaches don't want to let the kids go, but I really feel like, Tommy, by the time is, you know, the time's a kid's a 6th, 7th, 8th grader and he's highly motivated and he's having success, why don't you tell him to go to his, you know, his local elite club also, right? So he's achieving what he wants. But you know, if he's in that community practice, he's honestly going to be a distractor because he's probably so far ahead of most of the group that he's bored.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't even know where to go with what you said, but I agree with it by and large. I think that the community coach should encourage his elite kid to get out there and go other places. And the reason why they remain, why they get, like, you know, goofy about kids going elsewhere is because they're worried about them transferring, or they're worried about, to your point, not being credited with the development of that kid. And it's like, if your motivation is in the right spot, for the kid, which it should be as a mentor and coach and someone that people look to in the community to help young kids grow, it's like, hey, you need more. But you should also come here because you're going to wrestle for this team in high school, or you are wrestling for this team in high school. Your friends, your teammates, they could afford to have you around. They're better by virtue of you being around. And so I think it's a good dynamic. I mean, I would love for, in a perfect world, if my three boys end up liking wrestling. I think I got one of my boys is old enough to where I can sense that I think he's going to like it. But if my three boys end up liking wrestling and they're good, I would love nothing more than for them to go to an elite academy 1 to 2 nights a week and their community club 1 to 2 nights a week and have this perfect blend of wrestling with their buddies and their friends and being a part of a good team in the community level and then going to an academy for that next level type stuff where they continue to sharpen their skills and their potential.
Yeah, and so I think that helps. So, you know, as the coach of an elite club, though, I don't think the motivation should be all that different. I mean, maybe by the kid's his time that he's in eighth grade, you're really pushing him to achieve. You know, because he can be a cadet as an eighth grader, right? So you can be going to Fargo. But a lot of that, even that fifth, sixth grade development, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, where we're out of like the real little kid stuff, a lot of that should be about developing their passion for wrestling, right? Not about just getting them to win. And I think a lot of people at that age are thinking about just winning, whether it takes to cut weight or whatever it takes to do that, as opposed to actually building a passion for the sport of wrestling.
No doubt. I mean, it's tough, man. I mean, and anyone that – I think that to live what we're speaking, even as a coach or a parent, and we haven't really got to the athlete yet, but to live what we're saying is no different than trying to live a perfect life. I mean, it's not easy. But I think that –
Definitely not.
I think that you've got to keep all those things in mind. I mean, you know, I mean it's got to be something that drives you. And kind of going back to it, it's like, it's so funny because if you ask a normal person independent of their own children, if you got a kid to love something, if you got them to truly love it, would they be successful? You would say, yes, no doubt about it. They would be successful.
No doubt about it.
They don't apply the same thought process to their own kids. And that's where a great coach comes into play. And it's like, hey, we got to get this dude to fall in love with wrestling. And every kid is different, and the recipe to getting them to fall in love with the sport is different, but we're going to get them there. And when they get there, just watch them run. Then you're just steering traffic.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you're just steering traffic.
I mean, I don't want to brag, Tommy, about our academy, but, you know, I knew obviously we'd discuss that. But so last spring was the first time that I kind of like full-time coached a class, right?
Right.
Where I was there every single day. And just, I, you know, obviously before that I was fighting and I had stuff going on. And last spring, I was able to be there every single day. I think I missed like one day in 3 months or something like that, right? And it was so awesome because this group of kids we've kind of been obviously nurturing. We've been open for 6 years now, and the other coaches there had done a great job developing the passion. And Tommy, I can count on my in 3 months on my one hand the amount of days where I had to really say, guys, let's freaking go. Let's pick it up.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was just so awesome because
how old are these kids, man?
It was so I was coaching the high school group. So 15 to 18. So I was coaching specifically the high school group. And I can count on my hand. It was so awesome. I felt so lucky because I got in there to go in there every day and just coach wrestling. I didn't have to motivate very often, right?
Right.
Because these kids just love it and they want to get in there and they want to fight. And so now, you know, I can really say, hey, our system's really working because these kids just – I don't got to say, hey, guys, let's go every single day. They just get in there and they go. And then I got to say, all right, let's make this little technical change. Let's make that technical change. Let's work on this tactic. You guys are missing this tactic. We got to nail this. And so it was such like it was just an awesome feeling because they were driving it, right? I wasn't driving it. They were doing a great job.
And let me tell you, when that happens, Ben, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but when you get a group or even a kid that – is where you're just kind of they're driving the deal. I mean, how fast do they improve once that's established?
It's insanely. And you know, honestly, I had this feeling that like, you know, I had the same feeling my junior senior year of college, we really just had this team that had just this awesome chemistry. And you know, if you look at the kids' high school credentials and how much success they had in college, we freaking were getting, you know, everyone was getting so much better. It was just crazy. And it was the same thing. Smith didn't have to come in there and yell and say, "Let's freaking go." I mean, it was like every single day, all the guys were coming in and just bringing it every single day because that's what they wanted to do.
So here's the question for you though, Ben, because you know we both agree, but let's talk about this. At what time in a kid's career, and at what point should a coach value success? Because we all know that it's hard to be passionate about something that you always think at. So, like, how do we intertwine the obvious in the room here?
Well, I mean, Tommy, it's just the thing is, kids aren't going to come in and work hard and not get better. I haven't seen it, Tommy. I mean, obviously you have some kids who start at some pretty low levels, but honestly, those kids you see get better faster, right? They start having more success faster than a lot of the other kids. And, you know, obviously you'll have some kids, and this is anything, there'll be lumps in the road, right, where you kind of get stuck at this plateau, right? And we've had a few kids where they've been stuck at a plateau, even for like a year, Tommy, where they're just like, they're right there, and they just can't get over it. And then, boom, all of a sudden they have the breakthrough, right? But, I mean, I can't name one kid in our program who has put in a really good, genuine effort on a day-to-day basis. I'm not talking about the kid who comes in and dinks around, right, and is there because his dad says, you need to go to practice. I'm talking about the kids who want to be there, right? And, you know, sometimes
– so the truth is, and I don't mean to sound like a hopeless romantic here, but – If you love something, you fight for it.
Yeah, there you go.
You freaking fight for it. I mean, to me, it was, you know, when I said just I freaking love wrestling, you know, I just fought harder. I mean, I get tired, I'd fight harder. Practice get tough, I'd fight harder. I didn't know how to finish my single, I'd fight harder to figure it out. You know, a guy would compete against me, I'd fight harder to make sure that I protected what was important to me. Yeah. You know, and but to me, it's a tough question to answer, even though I'm kind of helping answer it. It's like, at what point does the win and the loss carry some semblance?
It takes care of itself. It takes care of itself in time. Yeah. And so I guess, you know, the one thing I do want to maybe make more clear that I know what we're both thinking, but I don't know, maybe we're not saying clear enough, is we're not talking about having, you know, playing games and dinking around and making them love it because it's, you know, you're having playing dodgeball every freaking day, right?
Capture the flag is not how you fall in
exactly.
love with it.
And so there is a toughness to wrestling. There is something hard about it, right? And so you got to get them to fall in love with the struggle too and get them to fall in love with what, you know. And then, Tommy, because then once they do love it, like we're saying, right, you can say you want to be a state champion. This is what it's going to take. This is where you're failing. This is what you need to change. And lots of times when they love it, they'll do it, right? Because they do want to be good. And so I guess, you know, I'm not saying make them, you know, play games all the time and dink around. And that's, you know, and that's where I kind of think sometimes elite level wrestlers who are at a very high level but who haven't dealt with youth kids a lot, they say, oh, just have fun. Just have fun. And I know I said it. For sure,
yeah,
they
just say it in such a laissez-faire way where it's like, you say that, but like when I'm on the mat with 48 kids and those parents have entrusted me with their children for an hour and 15 minutes, and three of those 48 kids are my kids, and I have my own expectations of what I want to try them to get. You know, it's not as simple as let's play capture the flag.
Yeah,
it's well, that was a great rec session, but you know, but how do I get them to come back? I don't think capture the flag does it. That's part of it. We're going to smile. We're going to laugh. We're going to bring in guests. They're going to speak motivationally. We're going to have fun. But to me, to your point, it's like getting them to cultivate and adopt the merits of wrestling. It's tough, man. It's an everyday grind, and it's not capture the flag. It's not that simple.
Yes. So I didn't want to clarify that. I mean, you got to get them to fall in love with the grind of it. I mean, That's really. I knew that's what we were both talking about, but I guess I wanted to make it clear. So, God, Tommy, I guess being a damn coach is pretty simple. You just get them to love this shit, and then Everything takes care of itself.
Yeah, except for every kid is different.
Every kid's different. So you gotta manage their emotions. You gotta manage the up and downs. You gotta get them to see the bright side of the coin when they're looking at the dark side.
Yep.
So yeah. Yep. So there is a lot of management. But that's the stuff that's going to help them for life too. So there is a lot of value that, you know, knowing how to talk to each kid, right? Building that relationship. And I would say, you know, a lot of coaches want to yell before they build the relationship. And once you build the relationship, you can kind of bust someone's butt and they get it, right? Whereas if you don't have that relationship with that kid and you say it to him, he's going to say, that guy's a jackass. And so right. I think that's important too, that you really build – that trustful relationship where they know you have their best interests in mind. And then when you say, dude, let's go, you need to figure this out, then they get it.
Well, I've always thought that the foundation of a lot of great athletes that I know is that they were loved in their home. I think that gives kids this unshakable confidence in everything that they do in their life, that it's like, you know, win, lose, or draw, I'm still loved in a very deep way.
That's a very good point.
It's like nothing can harm me here. I'm going to go let it rip, you know, and because when all else fails, I still got a great home to live in. So, you know, we're getting way deep here, but
I think that's an important one. You know, I talked to a kid today, had one of these kind of sit downs and kind of talked to a kid about goals and stuff like that. Right. And one of the things that came up was this growth mindset versus fixed, right? And I don't want to get too deep into this topic, but growth versus fixed mindset essentially says, you know, people who have fixed mindsets think that they're only good when they win, right? And when they lose, that they suck, right? As opposed to like, hey, I could get better, right? I could work hard, I can get better. And so, you know, and I think some parents put that on those kids without knowing that they're doing it, because they're kind of not educated in that psychology. But, you know, if you love them at home, you will develop that growth mindset, and then where they're not really afraid to fail, and they're going to keep taking chances.
I agree. Love it.
All right. So, what's up?
Where'd you read about growth versus fixed mindset?
Well, it's actually a book by Carol Dweck, and she's a really preeminent psychologist. And really, if you read any sports psych book, generally – her work is quoted in there. So actually, if any of our listeners, they should probably read it. It like I said, it's called Mindset by Carol Dweck. That's DWEC. It's a pretty easy read. It's a fantastic book, and it really explains a lot. Once you read it, you're like, ah, shit, that's why that's that way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would recommend that's an easy read, quick read. But it's awesome. I mean, it's just like I said, it's foundational. It's what a lot of other sports psychologists quote.
Right.
So I guess we boiled it down pretty simply for the coaches is develop a routine so where you get your kids to be passionate about the sport.
Absolutely.
And that's putting it simply. And obviously, you know, I think we could have like 10 episodes straight about different tactics and ways to coach kids. But
we should. Maybe we should do like a few episodes about youth wrestling a year, depending on how the success of this episode, maybe we will. Because, I mean, you could literally do this almost every week year round.
Yeah, and there are people who do it, right? I'm sure there's coaching podcasts. Let me Google that right now, Tommy. I bet there are. Best coaching podcasts. I only listen to a few podcasts. None of them are coaching based. 5 podcasts for every coach.
Boom. There you go.
Sports Coach Radio, Invisibilia, Get Psyched for Sports, the Rick Roll Podcast, Rich Roll Podcast. Interesting. All right. So yeah, so there are obviously coaching podcasts out there, which is not exactly what we do, even though we talk about it sometimes. All right. So lastly, Tommy, this is actually going to wrap up quicker than I thought. Lastly, for the athlete,
the youth athlete.
What are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, it's a tough question because, you know, I mean, you're talking about age age, you know, call it 7 to, you know, 12 is probably, you know, what you would consider like a youth slash adolescent. What should their approach be? I mean, it's hard. You're talking to a kid. I mean, they
so
don't even
know. I figured we were talking K through 8, so really 5 through 14 or 15, I'd say.
Okay, got it. You start us off.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, again, I think success can be quantified many different ways, and for some people and for some kids, you know, David Taylor is one that you picked out that was super mature when he was young, and I can think of a few of them that I've dealt with who are just super mature when they're young and they know what they want. Then, you know, you as a coach need to help those kids achieve their dreams, right?
Right.
But then there's some kids who come into the room and they don't know how to tie their damn shoes and walk, right? And so you got to teach them, you got to get them going. And so, you know, I think as an athlete, every single person's going to have different goals, but it should be to strive to do your best, right? And that kind of sounds very generic, but, you know, when you break it down every single way, and maybe you have a coach you trust, or maybe you trust your parent or a teammate or older mentor, you know, and you're saying at seventh grade, well, what I want to be a state champ as an eighth grader. What do I need to do? Right?
Right.
And then so he says, boom, boom, bam, pow. And so you get to work, right, and you do all those things. And if you really, truly work as hard, you know, you do what you think you can do, and you come up third, in a way it's a failure, but it's not. You know, I always say that about my career, Tommy, and I always say I wanted to be a four-time state champ. I wasn't. I wanted to be a four-time national champ. I wasn't. I wanted to be Olympic gold medalist, and I wasn't. And I was vastly disappointed on every one of those occasions. But if I look back, do I call those things failures? I don't.
I absolutely don't.
And so, you know, while at the time maybe taking third at state that year seems like, wow, that's a failure, you got to kind of see the bigger picture. If you're doing what you can do, then it's a success. And long-term, you know, one of the guys I brought in who had a really good talk about this, because sometimes when I say this to kids, they say, yeah, but you want an NCAA title, blah, 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 right? Mark Bader, obviously of Flow Wrestling, you know, he had a very mediocre college career, but he worked really hard at it. He just didn't kind of achieve to the highest levels. And so he gave a great talk to my guys about, you know, putting in your best effort, and even if you come up short, you can still look at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, you know, yeah, I didn't achieve what I wanted to, but I worked really hard at that, and that taught me the lessons I'm going to use later in life.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, man, I mean, and I've felt this way because I've come up short, and I've come up short when I did the absolute best that I could. And to your point, some people think that, like, doing your best is some, like, token – like, you know, I tried hard. We're talking about at an older age when you dig down deep within the depths of your soul and do everything you can to accomplish something. If you come up short, I mean, you get over it. You get over it. The ones that are hard to get over are the ones where you know you didn't put your best foot forward, where you know you didn't, you know, exhaust every, you know, ounce of you to get something done. And I think that that's something that wrestling gives these kids.
Yeah, 100%. So for the athletes, man, you know, it don't judge it day to day. Just get in there, work hard, trust the process. And, you know, it, like I said, I've never had a kid who's given an honest effort and still sucked, right?
Right.
At the very least, they achieved some high things. And I mean, one kid I'm thinking of, you know, he was a terrible JV wrestler as a sophomore. And he said, I'm going to be a good wrestler, right, after sophomore year. I mean, I want to say he was like 5-14 on JV or something. I could be wrong, but I'm close. I'm not far off. And this kid worked year-round. The next 2 years, didn't miss a practice. He was freaking on point, Tommy.
Right.
And he was 43-4 as a senior, and he didn't make it to state. And both kids he lost to at sectionals, they ended up being third and fifth in state, right? And I remember how – he was just so distraught, right?
Right.
And I saw him the next week, and you know, I said, hey, man, I know how you feel. I'm sorry you didn't get what you wanted, but if you keep putting in the same effort, you're going to have success at some point. You know, I can't promise you when. And he said, no, you don't. You don't know how you feel. And I said, dude, I put in 10 years of work to get my ass beat at the Olympics and not have another shot.
Right.
I'm like, you're a senior in high school. You're going to have plenty more shots. I didn't get another chance. And so right. I do know how it feels. I put my life into it. And, you know, and now that kid has had, he's had more success since then. And, you know, he is loving the sport. And so, yeah, that seemed like a gigantic failure at the time. But the fact that he put those 2 years in to get that close from a 5-14 JV wrestler to someone who is 43-4, that shows a huge amount of commitment. And really, I you know, his mom has said multiple times that he's changed as a person and he's a lot better off than he was then.
I'll tell you, as a coach, parent, whatever it is, you know, I when I talk to these little kids in the community club, really any age, I always tell them, guys, we're going to have fun. I hope you have fun. I can't make you have fun, but I hope that you view this as fun. We're trying to present the sport to you in a fun way. So number one is you got to have fun, but we can't make you do that. But the two things that I want you guys to control, and this is the way I want my sons to wrestle when they get into it, is number one, to your point, you've been talking about, you got to try your hardest. And number one's have fun. Number two is try your hardest. Number three is score as many points as you can. And I try to not get them to focus on the winning and the losing rather than just do your best and put as many points on the board as you can. Because if you're doing that, you can be molded so much quicker by the coaches that are around you, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say for sure. And you know, just to add on to that is trust in the process, right? You don't know when your big breakthrough is going to come, but if you get in there and you bust your ass, it's going to come. I can't promise you, but it will come. And at the end of the day, you'll feel good about putting your best effort in.
Right, right.
That's our band. That's our youth wrestling podcast. I kind of gave one of my things earlier, Tommy, where I want to, you know, have somebody give awards for those categories. For the numbers, I think that's important that we as a sport realize and recognize the importance of building numbers, getting more people into our sport, and not turning people off from our sport. I think we can do much better as a group than a 64% retention rate.
Well, to the point, we kind of stumbled into the statistic, but if we always plan in business to lose 10% of our customer base and year over year. And so we budget against that and try to grow the company. Obviously, you have to grow the company, and you've got to – if you want to grow the company, you got to count on losing 10% of what you have, and you got to grow it over and above that number. And so why would it be any different if you view wrestling wrestlers as customers? Then you certainly wouldn't want to – I mean, that's a generic business number, but why would it be any different in participation?
It shouldn't be any different at all. And so we as a sport have to do a better job. 1,000% have to do a better job. And then the number two challenge I want to put out to, and is this Flow, is this USA Wrestling, is this NHSC? I don't know who this is, right? But someone who has the means to do so. Get 100,000 surveys done, right? And so I think you send people to the state fair or somewhere where there's a lot of people with an iPad and you have a questionnaire. Tommy, you want to hear my questionnaire?
Yep.
Okay, it's simple. Have you wrestled? Yes or no? Okay, if they answer yes, do you still wrestle? Yes. That's the end of the questionnaire. Okay? Have you wrestled? Yes. Do you still wrestle? No. If the answer is no, why don't you still wrestle? And so then you have a big list of things, right? And maybe you can mark them, check off your top three, right?
I love it.
Okay? Have you – and that's the end of the questionnaire. Back to the original questionnaire. Have you ever wrestled? No. Why don't you wrestle? Again, big list of questions. They can pick three or five or whatever it is, right? And so then once we've done this with 100,000 people, you and I can guess why people don't wrestle, Tommy. But we've wrestled, so we have a skewed view of what it is, right?
Yeah,
we never quit wrestling, so we have a skewed view of what that is too. But
As self-aware as you and I are, we're freaking delusional wrestling junkies.
Yes.
So we need that data. We need that information.
But no one's ever gotten data. So if we had real data, you know, like one thing we say, the singlet, we think they're going to two-piece, that's going to affect it. Well, you know, you and I could think that, and I do think that. But if we had statistical data to back that up, that would make our argument so much more powerful.
No doubt.
It would. So I think someone needs to run those numbers. I don't think it would be that hard. I don't think it would be that gigantic of an investment.
Well, here's what they say in business, Ben. If you measure it, it will improve.
Well, we need to measure that shit. Right? So if we have a top 10 why people quit wrestling, top 10 why people never tried wrestling. Tommy, number one might be, I never thought of trying wrestling because I do basketball. That might be number one. I don't know, right?
Right.
But if we have real answers, then we can start proposing real solutions, because you can never have solutions to problems you don't know that you have.
Right. I'm with you, dude.
So, yeah.
Make wrestling great again.
So I want those two things to get done. I hope I'm going to try talking to Martin, see if I can, have him help me make that happen. And if we have the data on those two things, we're gonna move along a lot faster.
Love it.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed our chat as much as I did. I know I enjoyed that a lot. Tommy, I think we have the world championships. Oh, no, it'll be 2 weeks. So it starts next week, so we won't be able to talk about it next week. So we'll find something to talk about next week, and then we got the world championships to talk about in 2 weeks, so that should be pretty exciting.
Love it, man. All right, let's do it, bro.
All right, Tommy, have a good night, and we will talk to you later.
See ya. You are listening to the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.